Chairman, my colleagues from ESCOM as well will be contributing to the presentation, so I will hand over to them as we go through the presentation. I just want to give you a high-level executive overview, but before I start, I just want to introduce myself. My name is Deva Govender. I'm the Group Executive for Transmission and the Acting Group Executive for Risk and Sustainability. So the key issues in our presentation is addressing the three issues that the committee asked us to address. So first issue, obviously, we support the minimum emission standards as they're needed to reduce harmful health effects of air pollution and provide certainty for planning. Even though you'll see in the presentation that we have made significant progress on the power plant compliance status, there are some delays which is experienced in project execution. Obviously, this is not acceptable, and it basically delays in project management. But as an executive committee, we've decided that myself and two of my EXCO colleagues will oversee the project execution. This is not the norm, but considering the delays we've experienced and the reasons given to us, we've decided to elevate this issue to EXCO members to actually run this meeting that deals with the project execution. We've also made progress with our air quality offset program. Also, ESCOM's ambient air quality monitoring network shows that there's generally compliance with ambient SO2 and NOx standards, but non-compliance with particular emission standards on the Mpumalanga Highveld. There continues to be a challenge for existing plants to meet the new plant standards within the required timelines due to high cost, water usage, and impact on electricity tariff. We've initiated the process for applying for new postponements for the next five-year period. The detail of what postponements will be requested will be available once ESCOM has completed a thorough review. Public meetings for Tutuka Power Station's postponement began in January 2018. Four of the four coal-fired power stations, no postponements are expected to be applied for. So that's just an overview of what we plan to present. In terms of trends, you can see a declining trend in terms of yearly tonnages. Last financial year, we ended up at 65.13. That's the last financial year, 2016-2017. The projection for this financial year, 17-18, is around 56 kilotons. That's with 3 months left to go, and we've just extrapolated to say if the figures for January, February, March remain exactly the same as the last year, then we will end up at 56, which shows a declining trend. In terms of particulate emissions, in terms of kilograms per megawatt sent out, the trend continues downwards, and the estimate that we've given is where we put in for February for financial year 2018 year to date. Feedback on one of the plants where we put a fabric filter plant retrofit. As you can see, the trend has declined considerably since we put the plant in, and continues to remain in those low figures that you see. And obviously visual evidence to show that the stacks are clean. In terms of sulfur dioxide, total sulfur dioxide shows a declining trend, except for last year, 2016 and 17, where we obviously started using Madupi units more, and they produced obviously far more energy than the rest in terms of how we run them. So obviously they contributed to that increase in SO2, but once we've got the FGD, it will obviously start showing a decrease again. In terms of total nitrogen oxide, the same declining trend continues. Ambient air quality. These are our monitoring stations, and maybe we'll try to answer some of the questions from honourable members that asked it previously. All these monitoring stations, the are obviously SANAS accredited. The information from them is freely available, so it's members are looking for that information, and the data that comes out of there, we are more than willing to supply that information. It's based on request. These following trends just give you an indication in terms of the monitoring stations, in terms of sulfur dioxide. You can see on that slide where the red line is, It's a 5-year ambient air quality trend for sulfur dioxide at the Kendall Ambient Monitoring Station. You can see where the limit is, the red dashed line, and where we are. Also, to answer some of the questions that came out about whether it's yearly monitoring or hourly monitoring, the graph below that also shows the number of exceedance in hours versus the target, where the dashed line shows where we are actually below the limit in terms of hourly exceedances. The next graph shows the Marapong Ambient Monitoring Station. The same issue there. We are below the annual limit, and we also show the annual, the hourly exceedances as well, which is within the level. Just to make sure that everyone understands that we allowed 88 exceedances, and for this particular one, we're well below that in terms of hourly exceedances. The next one is Medupi. It's the same issue here. We are below the red line in terms of annual, and we're below the limit of the hourly exceedances of 88. In terms of the current status of ESCOM's air quality compliance plan, my colleague Deirdre will take over.
Thank you, Devon. Good morning or afternoon, Honourable Chair and members. So I'm going to talk to our roadmap, our compliance roadmap. This picture I think you've seen many times, but just to re-emphasize what it shows us, it's got a list of all of our power stations on the left-hand side. Next to each of them is the technology which we have planned to retrofit to control SOx, NOx, or particulates. And obviously not all three at every station, because we have a requested postponement. But you can see that from 2015 to 2018, we made the commitment to retrofit grid flare, and we have completed that retrofit. And then from this year onwards, we have several retrofits that are planned for particulate matter. And a little bit later, 21-22, is a plan for the FGD retrofit. You can see that from the progress, as I said, we fluid flare has been completed. Our next two fabric filter plant units are Tutuka and Creole, and we are scheduled to start with Tutuka next year. But what you can see is that we are slightly delayed on that, and David did refer to that in the first slide, where we have got some project delays on some of our projects. There's a delay, but it's not a stop. So we're going out on tender for Tutuka, and we have completed the contracting strategy for Creole. So they are progressing. And then at the bottom, we have been also doing high-frequency transformers and refurbishment of electrostatic precipitators, and these projects are actually ahead of schedule, so or on time. So we have not been neglecting the other power stations. We have continued to work on those power stations and reduce the particulate matter from those power stations. This is on the NOx, our NOx emission roadmap. You can see that there's three power stations that are planned for low NOx burners, and we have made progress in terms of allocated funds and detailed design, but we are a little concerned that we may miss the timeline for the first unit, but the last unit will be done within the stipulated commitment as per our postponement application. And then on the sulfur dioxide, we have commissioned Kusili with FGD. There's one commercial unit currently at Kusili. Medupi we will be retrofitting with FGD, and we are very concerned. There are some delays on the Medupi FGD retrofit. We have got a new program that we put together which shows that our first couple of units will be late, but that we will try and bring all six units in within the timeline. So our end date for the last unit with Medupi FGD will still be late, but we're hoping that the other units will come within that time. Then on the offset projects, Department of Environmental Affairs asked us to add a little bit more information, so we have. I think important is that the primary aim for offsets is that we improve air quality. But the secondary things that we achieve is that there is local job creation, there's improved community health and quality of life, improved relationships with communities between Eskom and the communities, reduce the energy poverty, there's cost-effective channeling of resources, and then also reduce CO2 emissions. The four programs that we're putting in place is the household emissions, so retrofitting the households with ceilings and clean stoves. We're also in the VOL looking at how we can reduce waste management and reduce the emissions from waste management in the VOL area. There's a lot of education and awareness that is required for people to transition from using coal to using cleaner technology such as electricity and LPG. And for future, we are looking at renewable options. But in this tranche of offsets, it really is about replacing the coal stove with a cleaner technology such as electricity and LPG. And renewables does not currently replace a coal stove. So that's why it's not in the first plan. Since we met in November, we have completed the pilot study for the 30 house electricity pilot, and we are now in the rollout phase of the lead implementation process. Just in terms of the findings from the pilot study, what's important is that that many people already have electricity and they use coal as a second energy source, mostly for heating and cooking. So we had to take that into account. So the new process that we're going to follow is we looked at just doing electricity. But just doing electricity doesn't mean that we'll move people away from coal and wood because it's deemed to be more cost-effective to use coal. And then there's also cultural aspects to the use of coal. So we are suggesting what we have is a hybrid solution, which will be an electric oven with LPG on top of the oven. So there will be two LPG plates and two electric plates. And then we were going to supply an electric heater, but the view is that the electric heater would just not supply the sufficient amount of heat. And then people would move back to coal. So we are providing an LPG heater and then a full retrofit of the ceilings and making sure that we insulate the houses. Just to give an idea of how many houses will roll out, we hope to have all our procurement processes completed in the next 3 months or so, and that would mean we would be able to start rolling out in October this year. We'll start off rolling out 166 houses per month and ramping up to 334 households per month. It's important to note that ramp up is just for the lead implementation, which is one community per region. But if you can look at this program and this roadmap for the offsets, you'll see that we run out of lead implementation. While we're busy with that lead implementation, we start the baseload ambient monitoring. Julie referred to the ambient monitoring that must be carried out at every community where we do offsets. And then we'll start contracting for the full rollout of the offset plan. Chair, I'm going to ask my colleague Ibrahim Patel, who's a technical specialist on air quality, to just talk to the alternative technologies that we've considered for sulfur dioxide.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable MPs. The slide talks about generally the air compliance projects that we look at, and they talk about particulate emission compliance, and we look at fabric filter plants at some of the stations and electrostatic precipitators at the others. And within the electrostatic precipitators, we look at flue gas cleaning, conditioning options, and high-frequency transformers, which have demonstrated that they are good enough to meet the compliance levels. In terms of the NOx, we've done the studies, and it shows that on the stations that we did selected that showed a few slides ago, that the low NOx burner retrofit will satisfy the minimum emission standards for new plant there. And then in terms of the FGD, we're looking at the wet FGD, the semi-dry options, and coal beneficiation if there is options there. When we look at the technologies on the next slide, obviously, the wet FGD is the most commonly used desulfurization option across the globe, and it's from a life cycle point of view almost certainly comes out to be the best, the least life cycle cost option. But they all have their pros and cons. We can achieve the 500 milligram compliance. The issue with this technology generally is the cost of acquisition of this plant and the water consumption associated with that plant in there. The semi-dry options, they are the spray-dryer absorbers, the circulating fluidized bed system, and duct injection system. The first two are can achieve compliance. The spray-dryer absorber system will give us the 500 milligrams. However, it requires multiple absorbers for the size of plant that we're looking for, and there are some issues with solvent availability and quality and the layout associated with that. The semi-dry circulating fluidized bed boiler option is something that we're looking at for Kendall Power Station. It's coming up on our radar screens, and we're planning to take that forward into a pilot to demonstrate what we can do there. The semi-dry duct injection system will not satisfy the requirement to get to 500 milligrams. And the operational costs associated with that to get lime injected into the plant is quite astronomical, almost doubling the cost of the power plant. In terms of cold beneficiation, we've looked at options at certain stations. These are not really viable options in that most of the sulfur in the coal is organically bound, and we are generally washing coal at a number of stations, and there's no potential to reduce the sulfur content further than that. Go to the next slide. So in summary, Medupi and Kusile have been selected for the wet FGD option, and Medupi will be retrofitted. The plant has been made retrofit ready for that to try and minimize the outage time for that. And in the next slide, we'll talk about our plan for this CFB option for Kendall. So in summary, the systems are complex. They require a lot of space. They interfere with the balance of plant, and in some cases, you don't have the option of shutting entire stations down, and that has to be considered in the technology selection. If we want to achieve 500 milligrams, there's only the three major plant options that have been proven at commercial scale, and we are, as I said, considering the wet FGD option at Medupi Power Station. In terms of the CFB option for Kendall, we intend planning a pilot plant to build capacity from a skills point of view, to also understand water consumption and also water quality, and also to explore opportunity for using lower grade solvent in this technology. And our tentative program for that is to try and get a plant running by 2026, I think, by 2024, and hopefully the rollout, if it's successful, will probably start at around 2030 onwards, basically. The pictures that you see over there on the left-hand side, sorry, the right-hand side picture, which is cut off from your screen, shows you the Kusile FGD layout. Unfortunately, the boiler is clipped off there. But you can see next to the chimney, on the right-hand side of the chimney, is the absorber island. And then on the left-hand side of the chimney is basically the balance of plant for running the FGD at the power station. In Medupi's case, we've turned the chimney 180 degrees around to make it FGD ready, and you find everything will fit on the left-hand side of that chimney. Unfortunately, at most of the other power stations, we do not have that space allocated there because there are balance of plant issues. So in the Kendall concept studies, we are considering demolishing part of the ESP to fit the CFB component in. And part of that upgrade requires that a new bag filter be installed to help with the sulfur reduction as well. And that's the concept that we're currently considering. And you can see on the background there is the, behind the chimney is the associated balance of plant associated with that. We also, from a scanning point of view, we're also looking at emerging technologies. There are options out there, but are not yet proven at the scale that we're talking about. And we are tracking them and engaging some of those utilities and service providers. Unfortunately, a lot of that activity happens under intellectual property, so it becomes difficult for us to get case studies. And as those concepts develop, we'll be able to access that information there.
Thank you. Honourable Chairman, the concluding slides will be done by my colleague, the Acting Group Executive for Generation, Mr. William Majola. He will go through the slides but also talk to and answer some of the questions early on about the certainty of decommissioning older coal-fired power stations.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and also thank you to the Honourable Members. In terms of our concluding remarks, I would just like to highlight the fact that Eskom has made progress towards meeting the emissions requirements in terms of our particulates as well as our NOx. We do acknowledge that there are potential delays for the first units, but we are pulling all efforts to ensure that the last units are not delayed. In terms of the offset program, for the households, the rollout will start in October 2018. The FGD for Medupi is delayed. However, we are making great efforts to reduce the delay periods and to avoid delays with the later units. We have initiated the postponement application for the next five-year period. However, at this stage, the detail is not yet available. It is currently under review. And of course, it will have to undergo internal ESCOM governance processes in order to finalize the application. And lastly, ESCOM has evaluated the technology options available to reduce sulfur dioxide. There are emerging multi-pollutant control technologies that can be considered once they reach the commercial maturity at the appropriate scale. And of course, Eskom will also pilot technologies which show promise of being better options compared with the FGD. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Okay, sorry, there's another one. So in terms of meeting the MES for sulfur dioxide, it does present socio-economic challenges. The current air quality program will add 3% to the tariff in terms of our estimates. Alternative mechanisms are required to address the challenge faced for existing plants, especially those 25 years and older, to comply with the new plant standards, specifically with regards to sulfur dioxide. Given that there are no immediate technical solutions to replace FGD, and also according to Professor Gerrit Cornelius at the November 2017 parliamentary colloquium, FGD shows negative cost benefits from a socio-economic perspective. I think that's all I'd like to say in terms of our conclusion, Honorable Chair.
Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the presentation. Do we have questions from members? Basically, on the rolling postponement, you do not have information as of now. The process is awaiting internal approval processes. I think basically that's what you are getting. the SO2, we've already determined more or less the way forward in terms of our discussion with the department earlier on, that there will be a panel that will be established by the minister that will look into this issue, given the complexities that are presented now. and okay, questions? Oh, by the way, the issue that I think the presentation is not helping us with is the decommissioning of some plants. The last time it was a bit more detailed. I don't know why are we not being furnished with that information now. Whether you also are reviewing that. Maybe let's get to this one first and then I will take questions from members.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what we've done at Eskom, if you look at the four older power stations, older in terms of age, that is Grootvlei, Komati, and Rena, we've actually found out that these stations are actually approaching 50 years of age, but we found that actually to extend the life of these stations beyond 50 years is actually not going to be economical, because in order to extend their lives, you'll have to spend quite a lot of money replacing critical components like boilers and components of the boilers, components of the turbines. But we've actually found that it's actually going to be uneconomical. And the reason for that is that these plants are an old design. They are less efficient than modern plants. So if you take, for instance, a station like Grootvlei, even if you refurbish Grootvlei, it will never ever be more efficient than, say, Medupi or Busile, the newer stations. And the reason for that is because these stations, the old designs, they do not have reheaters. So you can refurbish it, you will never beat the efficiency of the new stations. So therefore, it actually makes them a little bit more expensive to run. So because they've got lower efficiency. So if you really look into the economics of it, it does not favor refurbishing them. It does not favor extending their lives. And then what is also happening, Chair, already we are actually predicting that come the financial year, the next financial year, because as we are commissioning more units at Medupi and Busile, you will find that, and as having said that, the newer units are more are less expensive to run than the old units. These stations are not actually going to run as we commission more and more units at Medupi and Busile. Because what happens is, in terms of our grid code, we are supposed to run cheaper stations ahead of the more expensive stations. And here we talk about expensive stations, we are actually talking about mainly the running cost, the coal cost, which is a major component of it. So these stations, therefore, come the next financial year, we're actually going to start to put them into coal reserve instead. But so although they're not going to be running, but they are being put into extended coal reserve, and we want to put them into extended coal reserve as a risk mitigation. Because if, for instance, the later units of Medupi and Busile do not come on time, and if other things okay in terms of the power situation, you may have to run them. So initially, our plan, therefore, is to say, let us, even if they are no longer required to run from the next financial year, but let us put them into a coal reserve, which is a storage, as a risk mitigation. Then as we then finish all Medupis and all the units at Kusiles, I think that's when then we can review the exact dates of decommissioning, because at that time, then we'll have, 12 brand new machines. This is one side. But of course, we are also aware as well that come 2025, these stations are actually going to also require an FGD if you wanted to run them in any case. Which again, we are saying we're not going to spend that money, because we've already said that running these stations with or without an FGD is already uneconomical. So if you now spend more money to put an FGD there, you are making it even more uneconomical to run the stations. So the way I look at it is that therefore we would actually like therefore to, from sometime next year, put these stations into coal reserve, which is a storage. Let's wait until Medupi and Gusile are finished and they've proven themselves. Then we can then review the time at which it would be best to start decommissioning the stations. But however, it's highly unlikely that we're going to be running them beyond April next year. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Beyond April or beyond 2025?
Okay, what I'm actually saying is we foresee that because, okay, let me put it like this. You know, this year, this calendar year, I think around about October, we're going to be commissioning an additional unit at Medupi. We are also going to be commissioning an additional unit at Gusile. And these are big units. So therefore, we're going to then have to start switching off Grootvlei, Komati, and Indrina. We'll switch it off sometime in April next year, but just switch it off, not demolish it, and we keep it as a mitigation in case the later units at Medupi and Gusile do not materialize. Remember, I think we want to finish Gusile by 2022. So we switch it off, keep it as a reserve, then in 2022 or later on, we review whether it's now time to actually decommission it and demolish it, once we know that Medupi and Gusile are completely finished.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, Honorable Chairman, if you just allow me to just to add a bit of context behind what my colleague said and allow me to speak in my other role as the head of the system, as the head of the system operator, to add two issues. The question that...
You confused me a little bit. Is it Mr. Majora?
Yes.
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Yeah. You said Mr. Majola is the group executive transmission.
Generation.
Oh, generation.
I'm the group executive transmission.
Oh, acting generation.
Yes.
You are transmission.
I'm the group executive of transmission.
Oh, because I saw your card.
Yeah, I filled your role.
Transmission, and I thought you were saying it's also transmission.
No.
Generation.
He's the acting group executive for generation. I'm the group executive for transmission, but also acting group executive for risk and sustainability.
All right. No. Clarify. Okay. I thought it's the same. So it's generation, Mr.
Mitchell.
Koko's former position.
Correct. Honorable Chairman.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Why are people laughing? What's wrong? Eh? Oh, you don't know Mr. Majora. He's a celebrity, a colleague. Okay.
Okay. So just to add on two questions, these are critical, two issues. The critical question asked about decommissioning of stations. There are two issues. One is that we've seen a steady decline in electricity growth in the country. And even though there may be economic activity in the country, it does not necessarily translate into electricity growth because those two issues have decoupled over the last year. That's one issue. The second issue is before we make a final decision on when we decommission those power stations, we've had our discussions at EXCO, but we need to be afforded the opportunity to share it with our new board and the new CE, which we're presently doing, busy with. But also critical, we are waiting for the IRP to be released because that will determine the energy mix that's required and will also inform us in terms of the other pollution aspect, obviously, which is not being dealt with here, is CO2 from a climate change. We have, as an organization, as EFCOM, comply to the CO2 curve that's put in by the Minister of Environmental Affairs in terms of the Paris Climate Agreement. So we need to see what is the future energy mix and how that curve will be done. Because the only way to reduce CO2 is to physically shut down coal-fired power stations. So we're waiting for the IRP as well as a guide. One of the issues we've learned from our interactions overseas, we do not want to make the same mistakes as happening overseas where the power stations are decommissioned and then they are called back because of the intermittency around renewables and they need to provide a steady baseload. Or some countries are actually building new coal-fired power stations to meet that need. And also, those countries that do not have the problem have interconnectors. We unfortunately do not have that amount of interconnectors to make up capacity when we have intimacy in terms of renewable energy. Even though renewable plays a small part now, based on the IRP, it will be more and more. And that's something as a system operator, in terms of our license, we have to do forward planning on.
The interconnectors, you mean the interregional?
Yes, unfortunately, like a country like Germany is interconnected with everyone else, they can import. The interconnectors we have here only works one way, unfortunately. We export, except we import from Corobasa, which is Hydro.
Yeah, okay, no, I get your point. We were actually talking about the IRP, and I understand that there's a decision. But we have not yet received the approved IRP document. But we are told that apparently Cabinet decided last December or something like that on that document. So we are as very much interested as yourself on that document for reasons that has to do with the extent to which we are going to comply with some of the international commitments that we have made around climate change. But transition from CO2 has to happen. Okay? I guess the issue of decommissioning, as soon as you gather information, you'll come and discuss with us. But for us it's important because it will then temper with some of the commitments towards the Paris Agreement, as we're explaining. Because if you extend the life of those power stations, it will then mean more CO2 emissions, which is something that we want to transition from, except the air quality issues. Sorry, members, are there questions? Honorable Padden.
Thank you, Chair. This word postponement fills me with fear, because it's what we hear all the time. But the presentation reads, the detail of what postponements will be requested will be available once Eskom has completed a thorough review. I can't remember if there was a timeline set for that review. If there was, could you remind us, please? And then the other one, I'd like to get clarity on the this coal reserve, which is putting stations on hold. And you mentioned Hendrina, Komati, and Grootvlei. But my understanding is that those are chosen because it's based on running costs. But would it not be better to put stations that are the biggest culprits for emissions on coal reserve? Someone could explain the difference between that. You're basing it on running costs, but should we not be looking for the dirtiest stations to switch off? That's the question. The biggest culprits of emissions. And then the other one, I would suggest that the emissions coming down, declining trend, is due more to less demand than as a result than efforts from Eskom. So I think if someone could just touch on that. And then, Chair, the offsets. Now, we see on the offsets page 26 of this presentation, but it says baseline offsets until the end of 2019. But I'm thinking this is pretty much of a thumbsuck, because with all the best intention of the world, the delegation here are well aware that Eskom owes over 500 million rand with a debt, an interest debt of 5 billion a month. So I'm struggling to see, unless the new board can produce miracles, how they can even budget when they can't afford it.
Budget for
offsets. For offsets. because they haven't got any money. 500 billion debt is 5 billion a month. PIC have just loaned Eskom 5 billion. That's 1 month's debt. So with all the best intentions of the world here, this revolves, none of this can be done without money. And so at the moment, this is pretty much thumbsuck, in my opinion, because...
Honourable Pedin, are you arguing against the offsets, or are you just simply saying whether the money will be available?
No, I don't think anyone can answer that. I'm just cautioning everybody here that what we presented is a thumbsuck, because I don't think anyone, unless they can prove me wrong, but I don't see, unless they can tell me it's in the budget, but have they got the money, I doubt it. So those are the questions that I have.
Okay, let's answer the questions. But offsets, there has to be offsets. That's non-negotiable. So you'll answer whether the money is available for that or. But I think the message shouldn't be that we mustn't have offsets. You have to have. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Honorable Korea.
So I've got two issues. The first one, I'm making a follow-up on what we asked earlier. Unless if I'm interpreting the graphs well. I thought, or I'm thinking that Eskom is insisting on the issue that they are meeting the, or they are complying with the standards, be it hourly or daily or annual averages that are required. When I look at their first slide, yeah. So perhaps I must be clarified, because Dr. Kumalo was saying annual averages, they seem to have to comply, but with regard to the other measurements, they not. The last question is, to what extent is the lack of efficiencies in running Eskom a factor or impacting on the retrofits program?
Okay. The last question is? Sorry, whip.
I'm saying the last question or issue is, to what extent or is the problems of running Eskom efficiently so affect or impacting on the program of retrofitting and so on? Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Thank you for the question. The first question on postponement, the details, and is the timeline. Deirdre will take that question.
Thank you, Chair. We have to submit our postponement application 1 year before a decision needs to be taken. So we have to submit it by March next year, March 2019. The postponement process is probably going to start within the next 3 to 6 months. So the timeline for reviewing and being able to publicize what we're asking for is around 3 to 6 months, but not later than 6 months.
Yeah. The second question around coal reserve on hold and clarity, and maybe the issue is we shouldn't be running the units based on cost in terms of coal, but in terms of the amount of emissions, and you'd rather run those stations late. So. Yes, previously we could do that, and we did do that. We used to run stations with emission problems a little less. Unfortunately, and I'll speak as a system operator, we are governed by what we call the grid code, and in our license, we are licensed by the regulator. The regulator put in what we term dispatch rules late last year, and dispatch rule says that the system operator has to dispatch units based on their least cost. So we are now forced to run stations based on their least cost, and the most expensive stations are run at the end. Unfortunately, some of the very expensive stations some of the cheaper stations is the one that got the biggest emission problems. So we cannot go in violation of our license conditions of transmission. However, we do afford generation the opportunity to shut down some of the machines to fix up the, for example, precipitators so that you reduce the emissions. And that we continue to do that. I'm not sure, Willie, if you want to add anything onto that.
Yeah, I think you've covered it all. Thank you.
On the issue of declining trends is mainly the reduced demand that's resulted. I cannot dispute that fact. Yes, declining demand has played a role because it's obviously units per centiles, less units. But I think there has been a lot of work put in, especially from a planned maintenance point of view, to actually reduce the emissions. But exactly which plays the bigger part, I cannot quantify that. But I think it's a combination of both issues. On the offsets, the baseline 2019, the issue of funding, yes, we are severely constrained in terms of funding. That is true. But the money for this program was actually approved. The money is there. The money has not been taken and given to anything else. One of the issues we were debating is exactly the questions asked, where will funding come for all these issues? And one of the issues is that we may now have to consider putting this type of funding that is required in our tariff based on the fact that it's a legislative requirement and that NERSA has to take this into consideration. Deirdre, I'm not sure if you want to add on to that. Okay.
Okay.
The last question, the efficiency. Deirdre, you want to take that?
I think that's actually yours, Deborah, but maybe I can just talk to the sulfur dioxide, the ambient monitoring. So I think we are saying the same thing as Dr. Kamali said, that we do comply with the hourly limit. So there's a number of hourly exceedances, and we showed that in the graph. If you remember the graph, it showed the annual averages, but then the section below also shows the number of hourly exceedances. So we are showing the number of hourly exceedances. There are hourly exceedances, but those hourly exceedances are still within the number of exceedances we permitted in terms of the ambient air quality standards. There are ambient air quality stations which exceed their ambient levels and have very high levels. The three of them, and Tufatu must just come in, is the Komati ambient air quality station. We've got significant exceedances there. And then two of the communities we monitor in, which is Paula and Tabatsuka maybe.
The Gamutri site.
So we do have, but the last two are actually community ambient air quality stations. They're ours, but they're monitoring the ambient air from the communities. And, yeah, I think that's all, yeah.
So on the last question about would the lack of efficiency in running ESCOM affect these retrofits, like I said earlier on, some of the projects are behind schedule, and one of the issues, and I can give you a lot of reasons that we were given why they're behind, which is not acceptable, but one of them is procurement. We have certainly tightened up the controls around procurement, and it is impacting on this project where we have to go through a more thorough process, detailed process, but those are not excuses. It should not have been happening, and hence the management of this project will now be taken over by, oversight will be provided by the three ESCOM members, two of which are representing ESCOM today, because the reasons that we were given in terms of the delays around project management has nothing to do with the issues around efficiency. But I must say that some of the issues did delay, especially on the procurement side.
Follow up, Honourable Perrin?
Yes. Quick follow up. Could you just explain the dispatch rules? I didn't quite capture that, that enforce you to.
So, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Member, so basically as a system operator, we are bound by grid rules, and the grid rules dictate how we dispatch energy to meet the demand. So basically what happens is the dispatch rule says that you basically, when you, if the demand is 25,000 megawatts, you determine which plants will basically be brought on or picked up load. So first, obviously, the one is renewables. We do not dispatch renewables. Renewables are self-dispatched, which means they come on when the sun comes out, and the wind turbines, obviously, they generate when the wind blows. So they're not dispatched for us. We call them what we call self-dispatchable. And then Cobourg, the nuclear plant, obviously, is running continuously. You don't drop those power plants up and down. They run at a constant load. And then you stack all the remaining megawatts up to meet the demand based on what's least cost. So your power stations, the cheap power stations based on their coal, rand per megawatt, they are dispatched first, which means they will run at full load, which means that their output is like 600 megawatts, they'll all run at full load. And then you slowly build it up. Your expensive plants, like your gas turbines, they will come right at the end because they are the most expensive and they will meet the peak demand. So we are bound by that sequence, which is called the dispatch rules of, and it's based on pure economics. If we do not adhere to that and the regulator does an audit, then if it's found that the system operator did not dispatch based on that economic dispatch, we are liable to pay a fine or our license as a system operator can be revoked.
Okay. So that's that. Dispatch rules. Yeah, dispatch rules. Yeah, Mr. Governor is becoming very technical. But we are done, I think, with ESCO. But I must say that we will still need to engage. We may not be very tough with you now because we understand that ESCOM currently is going through a phase where you are trying to deal with the governance issues which led to the financial situation where you are now. So we will be a little bit lenient now, because there's going to be another engagement in about 3 months' time. because where we are, or let me just talk for myself, where I'm seated, I think I'm quite comfortable with the knowledge that you are going through your own changes there in ESCOM. There's a new board led by an able person, very competent, Jabu Mabuza, and a very competent acting group chief executive, which I think they will deal with some of these issues, stabilize the board, stabilize the entity, but then come back to deal with these issues. Because quite often, when there are problems with an entity, the first thing that they cut on is compliance with the environmental issues. That is why I wanted to get a clear impression from the question around the offsets, because you have to do the offsets, even if you are going through financial difficulties, but that is something that you are under an obligation to do. So the issues around the postponements, we will wait for the internal processes for approvals, especially given the fact that there is a new board in ESCO. Get those approvals and then we'll come back and interrogate the postponement applications or those that you wish to proceed with and so forth. But for now, we agree with the department. The issue of SO2, we need a panel that will deal with that. and we will get reports as we have agreed with the DG. So I guess basically that's all. We will get feedback from yourself on the decommissioning part, because that forms a very critical critical point in us complying with the or helping the country to do the transition. Because if you shut off those completely, then you have significantly reduced your CO2 emissions. So which is what we need to do in terms of going forward. But I'm sensing there's quite an issue around the renewables, from what you are saying, Mr. Govender. You don't speak with excitement when you speak about the renewables. which is something that I think Eskom must have a mindset change when it comes to the renewables. Because we need the renewables to transition. We need clean energy. And for as long as there is no appreciation from the side of the utility on the importance of us introducing this thing, we welcome and actually we're excited about what the minister has done to put in place the process to finalize this contract. So it must be done. Eskom must do it as soon as it's possible, so that we can look at the fourth commitment stage, the fifth, because this is the fourth, so that we gradually move away from coal, because ultimately, as a country, we have to reduce our dependence on coal. How we do it, the big producers like Eskom must help us to achieve that as a country. So those were just my closing remarks. You want to say something before we close?
I just want to clarify the lack of enthusiasm around renewables. That is why I said, allow me to speak as the head of the system operator. As a system operator, I battle with those issues of intermittent power, and that's the job of system operator to manage it. But I'm also the head of sustainability, so I have a renewable section. So I'm a firm believer that we need a diverse energy mix, which means there's a place for all forms of energy, and renewables is certainly something that Eskom actually wrote to the Minister of Energy requesting that we be given a determination to actually go into renewables. If the Honourable Chairman actually recalls, the Minister of Energy or the previous ministers only gave Eskom one determination for renewables, and that was the Sire wind farm. Other than that, we have got no determination. So in our last report to the previous boards, we said we definitely need to go into renewables, and we need a diverse energy mix, and I'm totally aligned with that. That's why I split my role.
Oh, okay. Because I've always been wondering, why is Eskom not one of the producers of these renewables? Why are you not investing in a plant, for instance, that can do that? Because you are responsible for generation. Why is it only the independent players who are in that space of renewable? Why can't Eskom take a decision and build a plant? I'm sure it can be done at some point, you know. So, that is a discussion for another day. But it is still our view that, you know, this is a way to go. But thank you very much. You don't have to leave. If there are questions, you can respond to later, but I don't know whether there will be questions. The NGOs who have invited the NGOs also to make a presentation to us, but time seems to be running out now for us. Can we invite Sasol?
Okay. Sasol is requesting 2 minutes body break. Can we break for 2 minutes and come back? They want to load some